effective sermon on obedience I've ever heard. And I think that's accurate. We're going to examine the book and we're going to look at, okay, what's the point of all of this? Because there's a lot in the book of Judges. In fact, sometimes when we read through it, it seems very random. It seems very chaotic too, and it is, but intentionally. And so tonight we're going to take a look at this book. And at the end, I just have one point I want to draw from everything we're going to look at. One point that I think we can use and apply to ourselves. If someone asks me, what do you think is a good summary of the plot of the book? I would say Judges is about how God's holy people turned into pagans. How the Israelites, who were God's holy nation, how they became just like the pagan nations that were around them. One commentator calls this the Canaanization of Israel. And I think that's spot on. That's a perfect way to describe it. It is how the Israelites became Canaanites. And so it's not a happy story. The book of Judges is a very sad story. It is a tragedy. And yet, thankfully, at the end, it does point forward to hope that does come after it. And so we'll look at that. Before we get into a passage from Judges, though, let's start in Numbers. Numbers 33. Back during the time of Moses, Moses spoke these words of God to the Israelites before they ever went into the land of Canaan. And the Lord said this. The Lord spoke to Moses in the plains of Moab by the Jordan at Jericho, saying, "Speak to the people of Israel and say to them, when you pass over the Jordan into the land of Canaan, then you shall drive out all the inhabitants of the land from before you and destroy all their figured stones and destroy all their metal images and demolish all their high places. And you shall take possession of the land and settle in it, for I have given the land to you to possess it. But if you do not drive out the inhabitants of the land from before you, then those of them whom you let remain shall be as barbs in your eyes and thorns in your sides, and they shall trouble you in the land where you dwell. And I will do to you as I thought to do to them." Almost everything that happens in the book of Judges happens because the Israelites ignored this. As we read through this book, all the chaos you see, all the tragedy you see is because they did not heed these words. They did not obey these words. Or maybe it's more accurate to say they obeyed these words sometimes. They obeyed these commands partially. There were times when they did this, but not completely. And that's the problem. And so the book of Judges starts off by telling us, yes, there were times when the Israelites drove out the people in the cities they came into contact with. Yes, there are times where they drove out the Canaanites that were there. But chapter 1 also tells us, but the people of Benjamin did not drive out the Jebusites who lived in Jerusalem. So the Jebusites have lived with the people of Benjamin in Jerusalem to this day. Manasseh did not drive out the inhabitants, for the Canaanites persisted in dwelling in that land. And Ephraim did not drive out the Canaanites. Zebulun did not drive out the inhabitants. Asher did not drive out the inhabitants. Naphtali did not drive out the inhabitants. That's going to cause major problems for the nation of Israel because they did not follow God's commands. And so in chapter 2, the author of Judges gives us a summary of this entire era. And so here's what it says. And the people of Israel did what was evil on the sight of the Lord and served the Baals. They went after other gods from among the gods of the peoples who were around them and bowed down to them. So the anger of the Lord was kindled against Israel, and he gave them over to plunderers who plundered them. And he sold them into the hand of their surrounding enemies, and they were in terrible distress. Then the Lord raised up judges who saved them out of the hand of those who plundered them. Yet they did not listen to their judges, for they whored after other gods and bowed down to them. Whenever the Lord raised up judges for them, the Lord was with the judge, and he saved them from the hand of their enemies all the days of the judge. For the Lord was moved to pity by their groaning because of those who afflicted and oppressed them. But whenever the judge died, they turned back and were more corrupt than their fathers, going after other gods, serving them and bowing down to them. Because the Israelites did not drive out all the Canaanites stayed in the land. And so the Israelites were drawn to the Canaanite gods, Canaanite practices, and the Israelites even started developing Canaanite mindsets about things. Because of that, according to these verses, what kept happening? Israel kept turning from the Lord and serving the pagan gods. And because of that, Israel kept being oppressed and enslaved by their enemies. And because God is so compassionate, because God is so loving and gracious, God kept sending in someone to rescue them. But sooner or later, they turn from God again and go back to leading a life of pagan practices. What happens to a nation? What happens to a group of people who keep experiencing that? Who keep going through periods of sinfulness where they've turned away from God? We may think, well, as long as they repent, then they're forgiven. So, no problem. That's incorrect. That's not true. There's still a major problem. Imagine if your body had a deadly infection that was doing damage to your body, and you had to undergo an intense treatment to eradicate that infection. Well, that's good, but your body now is suffering from the damage that infection had caused. So your body's weaker. Imagine if a little later the infection came back and caused more damage to your body. Well, you'd undergo, again, a treatment to eradicate that infection. But now your body's even weaker because of the damage that the infection caused when it came back the second time. Imagine if that infection kept returning and causing damage. Your body, even though it's getting treated, would still be growing weaker and weaker because you haven't had the time to heal. You haven't had the time to care for it and to do the work so that you grow and become healthy again and get back to the healthy state you were at the very beginning. That's Israel's problem. They turn from God, act in pagan ways, and the nation is damaged. It's harmed because of that. And yes, they'll get oppressed by their enemies and God will save them, but the nation's weak, morally. It's weak. And before long, they turn from God again and engage in pagan things again. And even when God saves them again, they're even weaker because of their exposure to the pagan practices, because of their engaging in pagan things and thinking of things the way pagans think. The nation grows weaker and weaker and weaker. They're not clinging to God. They're not dedicating themselves to God and God's law so that they can grow strong and thrive and get back to the holy state they were at before. No, they're not. And so because of that, the book of Judges is going to show us the downward spiral of Israel. How the Israelites were God's holy nation, but over the course of years and generations, they started to decay morally. And at the end, they look exactly like the Canaanites that lived in the land before them. So, with that in mind, we're going to quickly go through the book and watch this downward spiral. And I'm going to point out the things that happen that show things are getting worse in Israel. Things are not getting better. There's problems here. And I want us to see this downward spiral and keep this in mind so that we understand then at the end of the book why the things are happening that are happening. So, obviously, Israel turned from the Lord multiple times and got enslaved multiple times because he had to send somebody in multiple times or send in multiple people to save them. So we get the story of Othniel and how the Israelites were afflicted and God sent in Othniel to save them. We get the story of Ehud, where Israel's enslaved because of their wickedness, but God sends in Ehud to save them. We even get a short story about Shamgar, who saves them. So obviously, they had turned from God and needed to be saved again. So right off the bat, multiple times where Israel is engaging in periods of sinfulness. When we get to chapters 4 and 5, God has Deborah summon Barak to lead Israel in battle. And this is mostly a story of victory and joy and conquering the enemy. So, Israel is successful. They successfully defeat their enemies because of God's sending in someone to save them. But some of the tribes never came to help. Some of the tribes weren't interested in helping in the battle. They wanted to stay where they were. They weren't interested in helping their fellow Israelites. They weren't interested in answering God's call to rally to battle. That's a huge sign that something's wrong. When God's people turn from God, they start mistreating each other. But even before that, they start not caring about each other's needs. And so you see here a lack of unity on the part of some of the tribes. Well, moving on, God summons Gideon to save Israel. And here's a major problem. Gideon and his townsmen, they worship the Lord and Baal. And what's even worse, Gideon doesn't understand why that's a problem. Because Gideon, honestly, he doesn't know why God hasn't helped them yet. Even though he's standing just a little far off from the altar to Baal, he doesn't understand why God hasn't helped us, like God helped us out of Egypt. He's genuinely confused about that, which shows Gideon does not know the Lord. He does not understand that God hates Baal worship. And so a lot of the story of Gideon is God teaching Gideon just who God is and showing Gideon, this is how powerful I am. And a lot of Gideon's story is success, leading Israel to victory. But also, you have some of the Israelites that oppose Gideon and almost fight with him. They're angry because you didn't make decisions in the battle that we wanted you to make. We wanted to have a more active part and you didn't include us in that way. And we're angry. And Gideon thankfully talks them down. But there's almost some Israelite fighting going on here. Gideon makes a huge mistake too. He sets up a golden image. I presume it's as a memorial. But the Israelites, they bow down and worship it. They treat it like an idol. And then by the time Gideon dies, when he dies, Israel immediately goes back to worshiping Baal. As soon as he dies, it's back to Baal worship. Well, Gideon had a son. He had many sons. But he has a son named Abimelech. And after Gideon dies, Abimelech decides he wants to be king. And in order to be king, he has to eliminate all of his rivals. So Abimelech murders his own brothers and then makes himself king. And what makes this worse is some of the leaders in Israel support this. They support Abimelech. They support the murder of his brothers and proclaiming himself the king. But then a few years later, they betray him. And Abimelech goes on the warpath, killing all of his adversaries. And so people that oppose him are destroyed. And eventually Abimelech himself, while trying to destroy an Israelite city, himself is killed. And so what you have here is a very dark time in this spiral downward, where you have lots of bloodshed occurring, all because someone decided, I will be king no matter the cost. And the people said, sounds good to us. After that, obviously Israel must have turned from God again, because God sends in Tola to save them from their enemies. And then after that, he sends in Jair to save them from their enemies. So you have multiple periods where they have turned from God and are enslaved and need to be rescued again. But that brings us to Jephthah. Jephthah's chosen to save Israel again because Israel had turned from God, engaged in idol worship, pagan practices, and needed to be rescued from their enemies again. Now Jephthah, he trusted God. You see evidence of that. But he also surrounded himself with bad influences, with unrighteous peers. The text actually says worthless fellows. And I think that does have a major effect on his decision making and his mindset throughout his story. Because Gideon vowed to sacrifice to God the first thing he encountered when he returned home. If God will give me victory, when I get home, the first thing I see, I will offer it as a burnt offering. Which sounds noble. Except when he gets home, the first thing he sees is his own daughter. And there's obviously an extreme lack of knowledge of God on the part of Jephthah, because in his mind, I made a vow to offer as a burnt offering the first thing I saw. I saw my daughter, I have to offer her as a burnt offering. I have to keep my vow. He did. The text says he kept his vow. And what's so tragic is he obviously did not know the Lord. Because if he knew the Lord, he would know the Lord hates child sacrifice. But not just Gideon. Gideon, his daughter, his daughter's friends, his own men, his friends, his family, none of them knew the Lord well enough to know this is a mistake. And if they knew God's law well enough, they would know this whole thing is absolutely ridiculous. Because if they knew God's law, they would know Leviticus 5. And Leviticus 5 has rules about what to do if you make a foolish vow. What the Israelites are supposed to do if you vow to do something that's wrong. Like if you vow to kill someone. If you vow to steal something. If you vow to do something wrong, in Leviticus 5, God says, you're not supposed to keep that vow. On the contrary, you're supposed to bring an animal to the priest of the tabernacle and sacrifice that animal to atone for the fact that you made a foolish vow. Jephthah didn't know that. He didn't know God's laws. He didn't know about that stipulation about offering an animal to get out of a foolish vow. None of Jephthah's men, his daughter, his family, his friends, none of them knew that. Which really is a reflection on the priests. Because the priests are supposed to teach the people the laws. And if you read through Judges, what becomes very obvious is the priests are nowhere to be found in the book of Judges. They're just not mentioned. At least not the legitimate priests are not mentioned. After this, Jephthah is opposed by angry and jealous, arrogant people from the tribe of Ephraim that don't like his battle decisions, and they attack him. And Jephthah and his men have to fight their fellow Israelites from Ephraim, and the Ephraimites are killed. Once again, Israel turns from God, obviously because they have to be saved again from their oppressors. And so God has Ibzan save them, later God has Elon save them, later God has Abdon save them. So continual times where Israel is turning from God, engaging in pagan practices, being oppressed and enslaved by their enemies, and needing help, salvation from God. And so God does that. But that brings us then to Samson. Samson is chosen to save Israel because once again Israel's turned from God and is now being oppressed by the Philistines. And with Samson, he's given great strength, and he's chosen to have a special status with God. He's going to take a Nazirite vow, But he's going to have this vow from birth, his entire life. So he'll have this special, unique status that no one else had, this lifelong status as a Nazarite to be particularly holy compared to the rest of the people. And yet what's so ironic is he wants to marry a pagan. He tries to marry a pagan, which is completely against God's laws. Samson associates with pagans. And God does use Samson to defeat a lot of the enemy. God does use him to destroy a lot of the Philistines, but for Samson, he kills pagans because of his own pride and anger, not because of some loyalty to God. He's more of a blunt instrument that God uses than anything else. On top of that, he goes to pagan prostitutes. And I think most of us know women are Samson's weakness, because we know about the story of Samson and Delilah and how Samson chooses a woman over his status with God. The secret to his strength, based on this Nazarite vow that he has, he gives that up because she keeps asking him. And so Samson's attacked, he's mutilated, he's enslaved, he's mocked. Eventually, he does legitimately turn to God. And God gives him the strength to destroy his enemies, and he himself dies in the process. But that leads us in to the very bottom of the downward spiral, where things start to get especially dark and especially chaotic. We get a look at the lives of everyday Israelites. A man named Micah, his family, some of the people that he engages with. We see there's theft. We see mothers and sons commissioning idols to be made. And not just idols to be made, making idols to the Lord, to Yahweh. On top of that, we see them appointing priests based on whoever they want as a priest. Not ones God's authorized, just ones that they choose. And not just that, we see them hiring someone as their own personal priest. Not a priest for the city, not a priest for the nation, a priest for me. So I can have my own personal priest that I pay, and he's my priest. He's my connection to God. Nothing like what the law of God described. This is going to have major effects on one of the tribes, because then we get a look at the tribe of Dan. And with Dan, they actually go and steal those idols that the guy in the last chapter made. The tribe of Dan steals those idols, and they actually take that priest that he appointed. And they go to a city, they conquer it, and they set up their idols in that city. So now it's an idolatrous city, with the idols that they stole from one of the Israelites they came into contact with. And Dan, throughout the rest of Dan's history, they're mostly a city known for idolatry. Well, then we go back to the lives of everyday Israelites. And we get a story of a Levite and his concubine who travel past a foreign city. They travel past a Canaanite city because that's too dangerous. And they purposely go to an Israelite city, one of our own people, the city of Gibeah. And an old man graciously allows them to stay at his house, a very generous host. The problem is, most of us, I think, are familiar with the story of Sodom, when Lot was in Sodom. Something very similar happens here. The men of the city surrounded the house and wanted to take the Levite by force for sexual purposes. The men of the city, an Israelite city, want to do this. The Levite decides, I'll just give my concubine to the men. And so they take her, and throughout the night she is violated, and in the morning she's dead. The Levite, wanting this to be avenged, yet also wanting his part to be forgotten, wants to tell the story to all of Israel, kind of his own version of the story, but he cuts her body in 12 pieces and sends them as a message to the 12 tribes of Israel. And now the book of Judges gives us a look at the nation as a whole. The nation of Israel. All the tribes gather to deal with the city of Gibeah, the city that did that. Problem is, the city of Gibeah is in the tribe of Benjamin. Benjamin defends Gibeah. You tribes are not coming in and attacking our city. They defend this city of people who had done the most egregious thing. Because of that, there's civil war. All of Israel goes to war with Benjamin, and it is a bloody war. There are many casualties on both sides. It is a vicious war. Many Israelites die. And Benjamin is defeated, but is almost wiped out as a tribe. And then here's where we see just the most absurd pagan-mindedness that has just permeated the Israelites. Because they don't want Benjamin to dwindle as a tribe. But there's a problem. They actually made a vow. All the tribes had already made a vow. They took an oath to not give their daughters to Benjamin. We won't give our daughters to marry the Benjamites because of how horrible they are. Well, then how are they supposed to repopulate their tribe if they don't have any wives to do it? So here's what the Israelites decide. We've got it. We vowed not to give our own daughters to the tribe of Benjamin. So we'll go to an unsuspecting Israelite city, we'll steal women from their city and give those women to the tribe of Benjamin. That way, none of us have broken our oath. Because none of us gave our own daughters to Benjamin. We stole somebody else's daughters and gave them to Benjamin. Now, problem solved. Benjamin can repopulate. Everything's fine. And that's the story of Judges. That's how it ends. Is it any wonder why the last line in the book is this? In those days, there was no king in Israel. Everyone did what was right in his own eyes. It's just violence and chaos. No one is led by a human king like David or anything like that. And they don't even acknowledge their real king, the Lord. And so they walk by their own wisdom, their own choices. And the nation just crumbles. Well, there's no doubt the Israelites became the Canaanites. And if you're thinking, well, I know they did a lot of horrible stuff, but is it fair to say they became like the Canaanites? Well, let's examine these things. Idolatry, polytheism, child sacrifice, oppression of sojourners, assassination, prostitution, man-made religious practices, constant war and violence. That's what the Canaanites did. But in the book of Judges, that's what the Israelites are doing. They're guilty of all these things. Guilty of the same things the Canaanites had done. And the book of Judges, the author, I think, really wants to drive home Israel is Canaan. Because think about this. At the beginning of the book, very beginning of the book, God has Judah lead the attack on the Canaanites. At the end of the book, God has Judah lead the attack on Benjamin, on their fellow Israelites. Also this, Israel had used a special ambush strategy to defeat Canaanites. Back in the days of Joshua, when they attacked the city of Ai, Israel used a special tactic to trick the people of Ai and to get into their city and destroy it. They defeated that Canaanite city that way. In the book of Judges, they used that same strategy to defeat Gibeah, the Israelite city. And then remember this, God told Israel not to intermarry with Canaanites. By the end of the book of Judges, they'd vowed not to intermarry with the Benjaminites, with their fellow Israelites. And so I think it's clear, I think it's overwhelmingly clear, Israel has become Canaan. They were God's holy people and they've turned into pagans. It's not a happy story, but I think it is a powerful story. And like I said, I have one point I want to make from all of this. And that's you become whatever has your attention. You turn into whatever has your attention. For Israel, they were focused on the pagan gods. They were focused on the pagan practices. They were focused on the pagan people, and Israel became pagans. So think about it with us. If our attention is on worldly things, we become worldly. If our attention is on things that are opposed to God, we become opposed to God. Or even this. If our attention is on things that aren't sinful, but also aren't really spiritually beneficial, what do we become? Well, people that aren't leading sinful lives, but also aren't really spiritually benefiting anyone else. Lukewarm. So often we see, you know, politics is full of hatred and scoffing and mocking each other. Those people that are focused and their attention's on politics, what do they become? People that are hateful and scoff and mock other people. You become whatever has your attention. And one of the important things that Judges shows us is this change, this transformation is gradual. It's gradual. It's not some one-time noticeable thing. It takes time to notice. It's subtle. Which means we can become like the world and not notice it for a long time. Not notice it maybe until it's too late. Not notice it until there's major ramifications later on. That's very sobering. In fact, it may be that the decisions we make now, the consequences don't manifest for years. Or possibly, the decisions we make now, the consequences don't manifest in our lives. They manifest in the lives of our children and grandchildren. Or the decisions we make as a congregation, what we decide to do, what we decide not to do. Maybe there's nothing noticeable that happens in the next 5 years. What about 20 years later? It's a very sobering thought to think about. Something else Judges shows us is this transformation where you become something else. You leave God and become something else. The people who suffer the most are your own brethren. Because if you'll remember throughout Judges, most of the fighting, most of the conflicts aren't with the Canaanites. Most of the conflicts are Israel fighting Israel. When we turn from God, the ones who suffer the most are our own families, our brethren, our congregation. Which all of that then should give us motivation to cling to God, to be dedicated to God, to hold to God as tightly as we can, knowing we don't want to change and become something else. Our attention needs to be not on things of the world, but on God Himself. And that's really what I want to leave you with, is that this isn't necessarily a bad thing, that you become whatever your attention's on. Because if your attention is on God, then you become like God. Hebrews 12 was read for us in the scripture reading. Let us also lay aside every weight and sin which clings so closely, and let us run with endurance the race that is set before us, looking to Jesus, the founder and perfecter of our faith, who for the joy that was set before Him endured the cross, despising the shame, and is seated at the right hand of the throne of God. Consider Him who endured from sinners such hostility against Himself, so that you may not grow weary or faint-hearted. The Hebrew writer is saying, look to Jesus and you'll be like Jesus. Specifically, notice how Jesus endured and you will become someone who has endurance, who's able to endure and persevere. God does not want us to spiral downward. On the contrary, He wants us to press on toward the upward call of God in Christ Jesus. What is so significant about the book of Judges is God's love is so prominently manifested. Despite all of the horrible things man is doing, God is still sending somebody in to save them. And of course, we know that God understood, my people have a greater enemy. And instead of raising up a human from among us, God came down to save us. Jesus was manifested in the flesh in order to save us from our enemy, which is the true testament to God's love. You may be here tonight and you have not been saved by Jesus Christ. We want to invite you to do that. We want to invite you to come to the Lord because of how much He saved you, and because He does not want you to become something other than what He made you to be, which is created in His image, to be like Him, to look like